Fortunato!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Well, here we go, Brock. Another Brock and Salk podcast. This is the post-Labor Day edition, which means summer is now half over. I know the rest of the world, it means the end of summer, but here in Seattle...
Summer has just begun for Mike, because the smoke has arrived.
The official solstice of summer.
the smoke
right here in the middle.
Finally smells like summer, boys.
here we go.
Market September 8th.
Market.
Summer? Does this mean you can't wear your white golf pants anymore? Too?
I know the white have been retired now. Obviously, post Labor Day, the white pants. Scott Service will be disappointed. You know how much he loves the white pants.
Yeah, he loves that. You didn't even get to pitch him the idea of your white hat with your white top as well.
I should show him the picture I took of that when I was in Hawaii a couple of years ago when I went all white
fedora.
Yeah, it's a good.
He would have liked that.
The people clamored.
He would have been great with it.
It's also the start of football season this week. I don't know if anybody's heard, but we're going to be starting playing a little NFL football this week. Anybody know that?
Already?
Yeah, already.
You sure?
Right here in the middle of summer.
Now?
Right here in the middle of summer. That's how weird 2020
is. Preseason game number one.
No, Kyle, this is real.
What?
This is legit. They're going to play on Sunday. They'll be in Atlanta. Are there fans in Atlanta? They are, right?
No, they reverse course on.
Okay, yeah. So no fans in Atlanta.
No, they said fans, then they went no fans.
I think there's four stadiums in the league right now that'll allow.
Which,
up
one
to
of them's
like got to
be Dallas, right?
Yes.
They're going to do a full 60,000 people in that stadium, aren't
Indianapolis, Miami, Dallas, maybe one more, but they're
Houston
small.
And Tampa.
It's interesting how these have been determined. Tennessee, will they have fans in Tennessee?
No.
They'll have Jadeveon Clowney.
Because
he's not going to be here. I don't know if you noticed. Not going to be here anywhere. So, look, I'm happy he's not in New Orleans. By the way, I have negative take, positive take.
Okay.
Positive take has nothing to do with Jadeveon Clowney, though.
Yeah.
That one's all negative.
Yeah.
What the heck happened here, Brock? What the heck? Why isn't Jadeveon Clowney a Seahawk? What did they do?
Well, I think as I have read enough on this, as we have all talked about this for 6 months, here's what I think the reality is, right? Perception reality. I think the reality was when the season ended and they started negotiating with Jadeveon, and he was a target. Jaron Reed was ultimately the first one signed for about 10, 11 million bucks a year. But ultimately, there was a strong conversation, and here was the number for Jadeveon. I think it was probably close to what he ended up signing for and getting in Tennessee, somewhere between 12 to 15 million. I think that's where the Seahawks felt comfortable. They weren't going to guarantee him, money beyond the first year. But I think that number was probably around 15. Remember, we talked about it being 20. I think his thought process was going to be much closer to 20 million plus multiple years on it. And ultimately the Seahawks said, yeah, we've got probably 15 max, maybe even very similar to what Tennessee ended up with, 12 million with escalators up to 15 million. I think that offer was on the table for Jadeveon back in February. And then as you move into the new league year beginning and they sign Jaron Reed and they make a few moves with offensive linemen, they make another call to Buzz Cook, a guy that John Schneider has lots of relationship with way back when, I think all the way to Brett Favre, and said, hey, Buzz, here's the deal. That $15 million is going to be off the table here soon. I mean, we can't sit here and wait as other pass rushers go, and we've got to put our plan together. And if this is a no, right, in March, then we're going to have to move on. And we have to add to our defensive line room. Doesn't mean it's over. We'll stay in conversation with you. But what is over is the $15 million or so that was on the table a month ago. And then they sign Bruce, and then they sign, obviously, Benson, and then they draft two defensive ends. And you know what? That offer of $15 million was probably down to $12 million or less. And ultimately Jadeveon says, thanks,
right,
but no thanks.
Okay.
I've been there. I've done that. I've played on the 32nd ranked defensive line. I'm not about
that.
To get double teamed more than anybody else.
Understood. If he wants to get himself on a 1 year deal back at, he needs numbers and he's going to get those in Tennessee before he gets, I get all that. So let me ask you the real question, which isn't why isn't Jadeveon Clowney here? Because that's a good answer. Fair answer. Understand.
I think that's the reality. I honestly
all
think
very,
that is the reality.
That's fine. Those are all really good, fair answers. Why isn't anybody else here on the defensive line?
Especially if they knew 4 months right. ago that this was not going to be the thing.
So either they thought they were still going to get him, which is a colossal misstep, right? If you were banking on getting Jadeveon Clowney at the end here and it didn't work out, that's a major bummer.
Ooh.
And if you weren't doing that, which I can't imagine they were, why aren't there other defensive linemen here?
I mean, they told us
they just signed
DeMontre
Moore, dude.
That's right.
I mean, come on.
They told us very blatantly, our plan is to spread this money out, and none of us believed him. Because how can you sit here and say Bruce Irvin's supposed to be your best pass rusher when you basically
passed
on last
year? Well, he's not.
They
have O'Brien Scofield. I mean, Benson Mayoa, same thing.
Yeah,
which one is it?
So this
which
is
one do they have?
Scofield.
Hold on a second. That's
Benson Scofield?
Yes.
It's highly unfair. Okay, they've
pretty
got
sure.
other defensive linemen.
They
yes.
have three D tackles on the roster.
Is
We've been talking about Lattimore. They cut him.
Is yeah. Cassius Marsh on this team?
According to Seahawks.com.
No, we could use him.
Here's according to Seahawks.com. Here's your defensive line roster.
Okay.
It's inclusive of eight players. LJ Collier.
Right.
Rasheem Green.
Right.
Can't wait.
Benson Mayoa. Okay. The aforementioned DeMontre Moore. Alton Robinson. Boone Ford, Jaron Reed, and Brian Monier.
Brian Monier. Three defensive tackles. Three true defensive tackles on the entire team.
That's why they needed Clowney, dude. They were like, Jadeveon, you come in here, you play two technique. You're going to be our starting D tackle. Like, let's go, man. Come on.
Were they banking on someone getting cut that wasn't cut? Are they still going to sign Snacks Harrison? Like, what is the deal? Why don't they have a defensive line?
This can't be the plan.
This
is not the plan.
We're 5 days from the game. They're going to play a game with three defensive linemen in the interior of the defensive line.
And can Atlanta run the ball?
Yes.
I mean, yeah. We'll see.
I mean,
Todd
Alex
Gurley.
Mack
right,
and
I mean,
James,
that's my point.
James Carpenter.
The answer is yes. They can run the ball.
Well, they think they want to.
Atlanta can run the ball, in theory. I mean, look, we haven't seen any team play yet. But Atlanta should be able to run the ball. You have three defensive linemen? What am I missing? Like I don't. I'm not
3D tackles.
That's what I mean. 3D.
You may activate. Remember, you do get to activate a couple off your practice squad, and they did sign back Lattimore.
We keep DeMarcus a Lattimore
Christmas
on ice.
Got no love anywhere in the league, even on any practice squad in the NFL.
I mean, very to be fair, most people didn't. That's not. I mean, like I know that's your typical criticism, and I generally believe you. When your guys get cut and don't get picked up, it's a bad sign.
Yes.
I do think that's different this year, where there's
no question. And the numbers
nobody
are
else
clear.
Knows what Christmas looks like any more than you do.
Yes, only 17 waiver claims on average over the last decade. There've been 41 on the final countdown, so there's no question. I mean, it's less than half. And part of that also, though, is you got to sign back 16 if you wanted on your own practice squad. So, I mean, if you were not signed back, it is a whoa. It is a serious kind of red flag to your career because there were not even really limitations. Josh McCown could sign back at 40-something years of age. So, yeah, that's a challenge. And I'm going to get
the story behind that, by the way.
What's that?
When they signed McCown back, they actually held a race between McCown and Ziggy Ansah. First person to sign the deal, but they had to run to the piece of paper to see
is
who
Ziggy
got
on
to sign
practice
it.
Squad somewhere?
No.
Did we see?
I don't
see?
Think so.
His Ziggy's shoulder's not, better.
He's
feeling
legitimately
proffed.
The league watched that play and said, okay, we're done. No matter what you've done in the past, you got outrun by an injured Josh McCown. You're done. There's no room for you even on our practice squad. We don't want you. You're a negative influence on our people because you're that slow.
Can I just frame it this way to you with these eight defensive linemen? And again, I think Lattimore or somebody is going to be activated in Atlanta where you do have more flexibility this year. Okay, but these eight defensive linemen, can you give me a plus player in the league, a league average player, or below average? Just those simple three marks. He's a plus player in the league. Okay. He's league average. He's below league average.
Okay.
LJ Collier.
As of now, I think you'd have to say below. By the way, I'm still somewhat hopeful on LJ Collier.
Okay.
I am hopeful he at least gets the league average and maybe even improves upon that. But for now, I don't see how you could say anything other than below.
Rasheem Green.
I got to say below. For that Benson. Position, for playing defensive end, getting to the quarterback, below. He's not far below, but below.
Benson Mayoa.
Why am I the one answering this, by the way? Aren't you the football expert?
No,
why
no,
am I answering this?
Because,
who cares what I think?
Because you got Lofa Tutupu and John Carlson and the rest of them cut. Okay? You had an eye.
I do have an eye.
You have an objective
you got
eye.
Put on the bench.
For the record, When I'm wrong, Brock, tell me, because you're the one who actually has football expertise.
Yes.
I can just hear the people at home going, why is Salk answering this? It's a stupid, who cares what Salk thinks? You know, they're right. You should not care what I think. I am not here to analyze who's good and who's not.
Yes, you are.
It's not my job.
But you are. You have an incredibly objective lens.
Fine.
And your scouting reports back to your Nolan Naraki days have been pretty solid. Right. Let's
dude,
be clear.
You would have loved it. I played golf with a twosome this weekend. And super nice guy, Tom. And he was asking about that. He was like, oh, you work in radio. Like, oh, where? I tell him where. And he's like, oh, do you get to meet any of the talent? I was like, yeah, I get to meet some of them. They're super. Some of them are great. He goes, oh, man, we really miss Brock Heward. I was like, I know, right? He was like, yeah, we really miss Brock. And I was like, yeah, Brock is the best. His partner, though, like, you weren't a Salk fan, were you? And the guy's like, well, yeah. I was like, no.
Oh,
Salk's
no,
terrible.
Detestable.
Come on. And the poor guy is like, well, I don't, he didn't want to like argue because from the Pacific Northwest, it wasn't in his nature to argue.
I guess I could find some dislikable
but
things
he was like,
about him.
No, I mean, I like him. It was okay.
You think he knew your name was Mike
he had
while
no
you were
idea.
Having
like,
this
he knew my name was Mike, but he hadn't figured it all out. I'm like,
gotcha.
No, that guy's bad. Just ruin the show. well, not really. I was like, hey, I'm Mike Salk. It's nice to meet you. He was like, oh, that's mean.
Trying to bait me into it.
Yeah. All right, so the people need to hear what I have to say. Who's next on my
okay,
on
so
my
LJ
list?
Collier, I'm with you right now. I'm sorry. He's below league average. Right. Jasheim Green is at 5 technique, is league average, is like an edge rusher. I'm with you. He's
okay.
Below
that's
league
a
average.
Fair, that's a fair play. Fair way to say
Benson that. Mayoa?
League average?
Average?
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's a league average guy.
You
I think
can't tell
he
me he's above league average.
No.
He's league average. He's not a bad player. League average.
Yeah, what he does, his skill set, he's not going to play the run. He's not going to be disruptive against the run.
By the way, perfect, considering they have 3 defensive tackles.
Like Clowney is. Right? But if he's going to play on the edge, he's going to beat bad offense tackles over
and
the course
of
the year.
And there's a lot of those
guys. Yes. So I think he's a league average guy. Demontre Moore?
I mean, he's below league average.
Yes. Yes, he'd be below league average.
Played more than 5 games in a season since 2015.
Right.
Alton Robinson,
below
TBD.
He's a rookie.
Yes. He can't even grade, so we won't even grade. Puna Ford.
Average. I think as much as everybody loves him, I would probably say right now below league average based on last year.
Yeah. Rookie year was probably league average. Last year was a dip below that. And whether that was injury, what he was asked to do, taking on a bigger role, having to play more snaps.
He
which
was
again,
below league average last year.
Brian Monet.
Below.
He's
practice
below
squad
average. Yes. And Jaron.
I think he's above league average.
Yes.
I think Jaron Reed has the capability. Again, if Jaron Reed shows up the way he did 2 years ago, I still believe he is one of the better defensive tackles in football. If
okay,
he does
now,
that.
A better
at
exercise.
Least the most versatile.
Yes, and I would agree with all of those. So I think all of those are very accurate. I think a better exercise for this team, because this is the way that Pete looks at it, and this is the only way to go back and answer your question from the very beginning, is what in the heck are they doing? The only way you can do that is to say, okay, if that's the mark that they begin, and you are still a program that believes that you can develop and get more out of your players than anybody else through your resources, through your locker room, through your commitment to them, through your teaching, through your encouragement, you believe you can get more than anybody else out of those players. That is the only way you can go into Atlanta with 8 players, 3 D tackles on your 53-man roster. That's
guy that we consensus agree is above league average. And by the way, there are a lot of people around the league who would probably call Jaron Reed league average.
Last year was
last
league
year
average.
He was average.
Last year he was, for sure. So,
the question is, out of those 8, do you believe every one of those can take a step
forward?
Well,
you don't need every one, but you've got to believe that at least a couple do. And that list probably starts with LJ Collier, and next up is Rashim Green. I mean, you need those guys to be better than they were a year ago, and you probably should throw Puna Ford onto that list as well.
Yes.
Yeah, this is a zag, Brock, right? And we talk about that. The league zigs, and it's fun to go against the grain and zag. It's just that I like that. No one's raised their hand and loved that about the Seahawks more than me. The D line just seems like a really dangerous spot to try it. And I've seen a lot of people trying to make comps to the 2012 offseason after that year before the Super Bowl year. And I don't think they make sense. Well, remember in 2012, all they got was Michael Bennett and Cliff Averill, who the league didn't really want. It's like, okay, even if I see it that way, which I don't. I mean, those guys fell to them because the league didn't want them as much as Paul Kruger and somebody else. But they weren't, like, unwanted. they got devalued a little bit, but they still got some decent money. That was not Bruce Irvin and Benson Mayoa, who, by the way, were already on that team as backups for the most part, as extra guys. I know Bruce started at linebacker, but an extra pass rusher. They already had a good defense then. They already had Chris Clemons coming off three straight seasons with 11-plus sacks. In the 3 years leading up to 2013, he had 11, 11, and 11.5 sacks. Now, he was coming off an injury, obviously, at the end of that 2012 season, but they already had Chris Clemons. Averill and Bennett were young, ascending players, not guys likely on the back nine, which both Bruce Irvin and Benson Mayoa are. And they already had a pretty stacked defensive tackle group, right? Red Bryant was already playing well at defensive tackle, and Brandon Meebane was already a star. He was the only guy a couple of years earlier on the top 100 list in the whole darn roster.
Yes.
Not to mention some of the other guys that they had kind of filtering in then. So to say that this is like that year, I'm sorry, that does not work for me.
No, I would disagree with that. The only thing I would also say
this
is...
This has a potential, bro. But you want the ultimate negative take? Because I'll give you the positive one in a few minutes.
Okay.
The defensive line has the potential to wreck an otherwise excellent roster. It has the potential to wreck an otherwise excellent roster. Now, that'll lead to the positive take here in a couple minutes, which is that outside of that defensive line, they got a whole bunch of position groups that look significantly better than last year.
Yes.
We'll get to that one in a minute. That's the positive take. But the negative one is, no matter how positive that take may be, that the defensive line is probably the second most important position group in the NFL after quarterback, and yours looks significantly below league average.
Yes. Yeah, I would say a couple things, and you kind of made this point to us last night as we were doing a little prep for this, of how they like to go counter to the league and did so with big corners and did so playing physical coverage and did so with a 5'11 quarterback and did so by converting defensive linemen to offensive linemen and not having continuity on your offensive line and trusting Tom Cable to take anybody to make your offensive line work. That one didn't work particularly well. And I guess the challenge with this one, the positive, I'll give you a positive. The positive is when you went back to that group, they actually had to move Red Bryant from D tackle into a five technique to get anything out of him. He was going to be cut otherwise.
Right.
So they developed him and got the most out of him. Chris Clemons played his best football as a Seahawk more than anywhere else in his career. Mm-hmm. Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett came here and they were developed. Bennett, a guy originally cut, did a little bit in Tampa, but people didn't believe it. And then Pete got the absolute most out of him and helped him take the next step. And Cliff took the next step. So to my point earlier that they believe out of these eight guys on this D line, they can do what they did back then. And that is get more out of them than anybody else sees or anybody else believes. And there's enough history with Red and Bennett and other guys to say, see, we've done it before and we're going to do it again.
They're going to have to do that. I mean, it's going to have to be that, right?
Yes.
And it's possible. I mean, that's certainly not impossible. I mean, it's not like I look at these guys. I mean, LJ Collier was a first-round pick. Even if you think the Seahawks drafted him too high, it's not like he was projected to be a fifth-rounder and they just, like, randomly selected him out of, a roulette wheel, and the next thing you know, he's on their team as a first-round pick.
Second or third-round pick.
Nobody thought he was a third-round pick.
Mm.
He was a first or second pick.
Yeah, there were some.
Third-round pick.
There were definitely some.
Yes.
Stop.
Yes. Actually, can we have the draft guru, Boy Howdy himself?
Third rounder.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, go back and look. Go ahead, Howdy. Go back and type it in, you know, while we continue to chat over here.
Mid-third round pick.
But no, anyways, he was not a consensus.
Stop. You did not see him on first two-round mock drafts.
Howdy,
from
stop it.
Anyone.
He was not a consensus third-round pick.
Anyone.
That is a flat. That's right.
He is a no-twitch,
while you're talking
speed,
about his third-round consensusness, please tell me about how all of the taxi squad games are going against the other team's taxi squads. Don't listen to anything this boy
LJ
says.
LJ was a 6'2", 280-pound, powerful man coming out of TCU that was a little bit of a tweener. Is he going to be a Leo in this league and an edge rusher that can win? Well, he didn't really do that in 5 years at TCU. Can he be a five technique and kind of a powerful, versatile guy, slide in and play some nickel pass rush? That ultimately is what the Seahawks believe he can be and why they draft him in the first round. And I'm not quite where Howdy is, a consensus third round pick, but he certainly was not on anybody's first round mock drafts and was probably closer to a late second and maybe even into some third rounds. But I would say closer to a late second
round pick. Even if we could say he's a consensus second round pick. That still should be a pretty good player in the NFL, which we haven't seen yet. So the idea is he should be able to grow. Rasheem Green was what? Early third round, right? I mean, that's a guy that should be, I mean, has enough talent, and that wasn't a ridiculous pick when it was made. No. I mean, like,
throughout the course of the draft process, he was anywhere between the late first and the third.
Okay, so, I mean, he's a guy with some talent. He was young and hadn't done it all in college, and he's had some injury stuff. Okay, fine. Like, those are guys that have enough potential, according to the way the league viewed them,
yes,
that there should be more in there. It's up to you now to get it out of them.
Yes. And it's twitch and speed, to be honest with you. And it's going to be the fun thing over the course of this season, Salky, is that I'll get my eyes on even more people in the NFL than I have in years past, getting a little bit closer and watching, for example, the team that I'm going to get to watch this Sunday, the Green Bay Packers, who were 13-3 a year ago, who did so with a really dominant pair of ends that, you know, the Seahawks could have had, right? Mm-hmm. When they were looking to kind of address their needs on that D line and phase out of Bennett and phase out of Averill and phase out of that Clemens, out of that crew into the next iteration, there were the Smith brothers. Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith were free agents, right? And ultimately Green Bay said, these are the two we want. And when you just watch the tape, man, they are so, especially Za'Darius,
I know,
is so unbelievably twitchy and fast and explosive. And I think making $14 million a year and taking over games. And, you know, that to me, and Howdy said it earlier, like no twitch, no speed. Like, okay, where's going to, you have to be, man, you have to be unique. Cliff was so fast. Bennett, for his size, was so, his first step and his violence was so unique. Clemens, for his size, was really twitchy and fast. Like LJ, Rasheem, DeMontre, Benson.
Yeah. It's just not that.
Right.
So that's the negative side of it. Here is the positive, and I gave you the little tease of it, but here's the positive take. Outside of the defensive line, God, how much better is this roster than last year?
Yep.
In order of likelihood to be better at this position group, here's my list. They should or could be better at safety, tight end, running back, wide receiver, cornerback, offensive line, and linebacker. That's in order of likelihood. So let me just run it down quickly. Safety, I think we, if they're not better at safety, we should all quit. Just quit the business, every one of us. Quit being a fan, quit being on the radio, quit being on a podcast. Just get out. If Jamal Adams and a healthy Quandre Diggs aren't better than the two-headed monster of Tedrick Thompson and Leno Hill, then we should be done. They should cancel football at that point.
Well, and big play Brad McCoo.
They better be better at safety. That seems like the ultimate no-brainer, obviously, unless everybody gets hurt. Secondly, tight end. If Disley's back and you sign, Brock, you were raving last week about how good Greg Olsen looks.
Mm-hmm.
They should be better at tight end then. And look, it's not a shot at Hollister. He's a large wide receiver.
Yes. He's an H-back. Yep.
I mean,
no,
like,
there's no question. There's no question they're better at safety.
And he's still
there's no
there.
Question they're better at tight
they
end.
They should be better at tight end.
Yeah.
They should be better at running back, especially mm-hmm. once Rashad Penny comes back. I mean, Carlos Hyde, 1,000-yard seasons, etc. You got Chris Carson healthy again. They should be better at running back than they were last year.
You see
year.
Penny running in the indoor facility?
No.
He looked pretty good.
Good.
Yeah, six Stay weeks in. Away. You'll have to sit for the first 6 weeks.
But. And of all rookies, DJ Dallas might be the one we've heard the most about through camp.
Right. Yeah, good point.
Jordan Brooks hasn't flashed much. Obviously, you want to get Daryl Taylor out there. Alton Robinson and DJ Dallas are the two that you've heard their name the most.
Okay, so hopefully you don't have to start Travis Homer at running back the way you did last year.
Oof. Not good.
I mean, that's the legitimacy of how much better their running back room should be. And you can say running backs don't matter, but they matter a little bit.
They matter a lot in this system.
They
sure
do.
Pound the rock. So, all yes, right. I think that is
so
absolutely
that's three position
three
groups.
For three.
Last
I'm
year, we
you.
Were talking about how Russell Wilson was carrying a, like, 2-14 roster. Well, there's three position groups off the top of your head that are better.
That was Howdy saying
no,
2
Mike
and 14.
Was saying that when they were, like,
me.
8-2 or something.
That was actually
and
me.
Salk was like, boy, this team's tough to watch.
They were
bad. Boy, are they bad.
They were bad. Other than Russell, they were bad.
I mean, they were an inch away from winning the NFC West.
Thanks to Russ, because those position groups are bad. Those three are now all better.
Yep.
I would say that wide receiver should be better, if for no other reason than DK Metcalf in season 2, right? If wide receivers start to take the leap in years two and three, and he was that last year, assuming he can stay healthy, and I will always have that worry with him, whether it's fair or not.
Agreed.
Shouldn't they be better just by him being better?
And they got no old guys that are getting older on that team.
Not really.
So even the young guys should be getting older and a little better.
And I would say that the fact that Paul Richardson was cut is a really good sign. If they felt like they had enough depth that they didn't need to keep Paul Richardson around, that means that they obviously feel pretty darn good about some of the guys they've got.
And they hope Dorsett gets healthy. Pete Carroll said 2 weeks ago Dorsett's the fastest player he's had in a decade in Seattle.
Yeah, is that
faster
true?
Faster than Percy Harvin, he said.
Who else would it even be? Earl?
Yeah.
Like, who's that level of speed that they've had here?
Mm.
They haven't really had those like crazy,
Jimmy
other
Graham.
Than Earl. What? What did you say?
Jimmy Graham.
Stop.
Who else
it would be? Percy. No,
Percy.
It'd be Percy, but he had a hip surgery, and you know he had some issues from
Devin
the neck
Hester
up as well.
Here for a minute, but he was at the end. I mean,
still
a young
fun
Devin.
To watch.
He was
fun.
He had that return for a touchdown that got called back.
It'd be Percy.
It'd probably be Percy, and that'd be about it. So that's, I mean, that's pretty cool. So wide receiver should be better. That one, I think, is a little bit iffy. I said offensive line would be better, but it's mostly just by subtraction with a Fetty. But their offensive line absolutely could be better than a year ago. I don't know about quite should, but it could be.
It and felt then, real confident about heading into training camp and then coming out of it.
Right.
Maybe not
a
as
little,
much.
I don't know.
But they're all healthy. That's crazy.
And then linebacker, maybe there's a bit of a stretch, but you got a first rounder who you're now plugging in as a fourth guy. Bruce was good in that spot.
Yes.
I don't know whether Bruce is ever going to be a premier pass rusher, but he was a good strong side linebacker in this system and should be.
And still
again.
Will be. Yeah, I think that's improved. I'd actually put that linebacker crew a bump ahead of the offensive line.
Fair.
Yeah, I think because of Bruce and his ability to just set an edge and play that strong side backer, and I do think that Bobby's pretty hungry. Bobby's going to be pushed. Bobby and was a captain again with Russell and Nico Thorpe, God bless him, and carving out his role on special teams and being a force there. So, no, I would actually put the linebacker crew on your pecking order.
Seven position groups that should be better than a year ago.
I
will sit here and harp on the defensive line for good reason, but if you want to look at the other side of it, which is incredibly valid, John Schneider this offseason has improved somewhere between 5 and 7 position groups.
Yes. Yeah, I think the challenge is
and by the way, corner could be on there too.
Should be.
Oh,
I probably should have put corner on there. Why didn't I have corner? I do have corner on there. I'm sorry. I did have corner.
It's pretty high up there, actually.
I did. Corner should be on there too. I had corner right after wide receiver. Having Dunbar should help that, and the nickel spot with Blair should help that as well. Sorry, I just missed it.
Agreed.
But safety, tight end, running back, wide receiver, corner, all should be better, right? Safety, tight end, running back, wide receiver, corner. That's 5 groups that almost definitely will be better than a year ago, and then offensive line and linebacker, we'll see.
Yes.
That's impressive.
Yes. I think,
what does that
leave? And not to diminish any of the
D-line.
Positives.
D-line. That's it. Yep. Every other position,
and
quarterback. And quarterback. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And quarterback, you already have you have the best quarterback in the NFC. So
that's nice.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And you do have your specialist back, and you can laugh at that and poke fun at it. But you know what? In close games and the way this team plays, you do have both those guys back, and both are very talented. Mm-hmm. Both are talented guys.
I'm not huge on Myers, buddy.
Yeah, Steven Hauschka is available.
Yeah,
why did they get Hauschka? Do you see Belichick's refusing to name a starting kicker?
Yeah, he's in Miami's head. He's like, you'll have no idea who kicks this extra point. Good luck.
Awesome.
Yeah, you can game plan against this all day, Brian Flores.
You don't even know who it is.
No shot.
You don't know who's going to kick.
By the way, did you hear Belichick on the Navy-BYU game?
No.
I did. I saw him on there. That was woof. That was a tough watch early, Brock.
That was.
And I love college football.
That was a tough watch. I would say, Kyle, and I'm going to get back to the all this positivity in just a second. I would say that BYU-Navy game was the hardest watch of any college football game yet. The many of the others on Saturday, actually, I thought went off pretty swimmingly. And you didn't feel, like from a broadcast standpoint, that didn't feel that much different. But when you have Skycam and Herbstreit and the magnitude and all the graphics and everything else, and then the stadium is a morgue. It is empty. And there's no sound from the stadium, unlike these NFL games we're going to watch where there's 70 to 80 decibels of actual NFL film sound from those stadiums that they've acquired over the last 10 years. And that is what you will hear in stadium on top of what, you know, all the networks are going to do to play sound, you know, kind of in the background as you've seen them do with baseball and basketball. They decided not to do that on this BYU Navy game. And
it
then
hurt.
And then they decided to have Bill Belichick on, which when I think on paper that? Sounded great because he's a Navy and his affinity for Navy, and he cut his teeth in Navy. And literally for one answer, I think, was 7 minutes. You've said this before, Salk, with Belichick.
Oh, yeah.
If you actually ask him, you know, like football history,
oh, yeah.
He won't stop talking.
He will not stop talking.
And so I love my time at Navy, and when I was there, Roger Staley. And it was 6 straight minutes of one tone over touchdowns and, like, the biggest plays of the game. I was like, oh, my gosh, this is really tough. Anywho, to spin back to your point about all that positivity, and I think here, and you said this at the start, is what is most perplexing with this. It wasn't as if you did all of this stuff and you made all of these additions and trades and everything else you did to really shore up so many of these spots, and you did it with an eye to me entirely like, ooh, okay, well, the sacrifice is going to have to be on the D-line. It wasn't like you made a lot of these moves and the sacrifice had to be.
No, you could have done all this and had the D-line improve. That's what's so frustrating.
Yes. That is where I'm curious, and maybe they would say, nope, not true. You know, we had to spend 5.5 on Bruce and 3.5 on Benson, and we did that, and then our draft capital in the second and the fifth round, and we actually did. We did spend some dollars and some significant dollars, but man, it just feels like there could have been more and should have been more done to that group in particular.
Well, that will become sort of, you know, as we talk about themes to watch for, I mean, that is the friction point for this team, right? Which will be a more powerful force, right? Gravity or a magnet? will it be the defensive line struggles or the improvement at all of the other positions? And I know that a lot of folks will be, no, the big thing question in this team is let Russ cook. I don't think so. I'm not saying that that's not a worthy narrative or a worthy conversation. Of course it is. That will be an interesting friction point. It's something we'll watch and see what their offensive style is. But it's not more important to their success than this. Will the improved talent at 5 to 7 position groups be enough to offset what is not just a problem on defensive line? It's a significant drop-off. Yeah. It's not just, by the way, it's not just that they lost Clowney. I mean, the next two best players on the defensive line last year were Quentin Jefferson and Al Woods. They're gone too. So,
yes.
So will there be enough of an offset with the other positional groups improving? Plus, obviously, you know, Benson Mayowa and hopefully an improved Jaron Reed, et cetera, to offset those losses. And that's the question.
Yep, and we'll watch Jadeveon Clowney in Tennessee, and you know, I'm of the opinion if healthy, he's going to have double-digit sacks. I think he's going to have a career year in that division and in that conference. And realizing, okay, this is all about sacks. It's not about just me sacrificing and playing hurt and playing against the run and being disruptive. Like, this league pays you for sacks and sacks alone and that productivity. And I think he's going to be an absolute madman out there. And then we're going to watch, you know, some of the other defensive ends that you could have signed if you made that a priority. Would have cost you a few more bucks. But the ones that went off, you know, in the first week and a half of free agency, we'll get to watch them all across the league. And, you know, that will be the bet that they're hedging. And they believe so what's that?
Can it work? I mean, that's really the question. And it's funny because I feel like there's going to be, and I can imagine the people right now just screaming at their headphones in the podcast going, why are you guys being so negative heading into this first game? I don't mean to be. In fact, I'm really positive about the Seahawks' chances. They were as good as they were last year with all kinds of problems on this roster. Yep. Russell Wilson's that good. That needs to be said. Russell Wilson is that good that no matter what hand-wringing we do over any other position group, Russell Wilson will have this team in the playoffs because he's that good.
Yep.
All of those position groups being better, I am ridiculously pumped for this secondary. They should actually take the ball away. They should. They should take the ball away. They should hit harder. They should make guys. We'll talk to Adam Amin here in a little bit. He was, spoiler alert, because we taped the interview. He was at the Cincinnati game, and I was thinking about all those little receptions that Cincinnati had for 6, 7, 8, 10 yards in
season
that game.
Season opener last year.
Yeah, season opener. And then, like, you know, there was nobody got hit. They should hit now. Right? I mean, those should come with a little bit of a punishment. And Jamal Adams is a threat anywhere he is on the field to either hurt you or make a big play. Right? Quandre Diggs, when he was in this defense last year, they were significantly better than when he wasn't. Their secondary should be ridiculous, and it should be a playmaking secondary. So if that defensive line group at the front should just do anything, just play okay, gosh, and put a little pressure on, they should be able to do some really amazing, important, impactful things on the back end. And Brock, their offense should be better than a year ago too, right?
And why they're favored by 1.5 on the road down in Atlanta with no preseason and no chance for anybody to watch them. And, you know, I was kind of curious to see what that line would be, and Matt Ryan and Julio Jones and some talented players, and Todd Gurley, who, by the way, has feasted on the Seahawks more than anybody else in any other team in his career, with 11 rushing touchdowns and some, I think, 700 yards against them. So, yeah, I mean, you know, the rest of the folks that know this stuff and you know, put those numbers out, to your point, I think that's about number three. I think that's about DK Metcalf. I think that's about Tyler Lockett. I think that's about Greg Olsen. I think it's about the two-headed running backs that you're going to have with Carlos Hyde and Chris Carson. And, you know, it's about the experience that Russ brings to the table now in year three with Shoddy as well. That, yeah, there is a whole lot to be excited about in an enormous roster that overall, I don't know how you can argue, is not improved from a season ago in a 10-win team. So, yeah, let Russ cook and let's go.
So you're ready. It sounds like you're ready for game one in Atlanta. Now, I don't know if people have figured out food yet for Sunday. I mean, everything just sort of sneaks up on you. So if you haven't done enough to prepare, and if you haven't been to Famous Dave's, let me recommend a nice match. Little barbecue, big game, first game of the year on Sunday, right? You got St. Louis-style spare ribs. Brock, you know I'm a ribs guy.
Yep.
You got whole country roasted chicken, Texas beef brisket, Georgia chopped pork. A lot of options, okay?
Howdy likes that George chop pork.
Howdy's the brisket guy. I think you got Howdy's the brisket guy. He's the brisket guy.
I've seen Howdy eat some Georgia chop pork, too.
That's also true.
I didn't say Howdy won't eat all of it. I just said that, really, if he's known for anything, it's being wrong and for Texas beef brisket. That's sort of the two main Howdy things. Too much confidence. Anyway, lots of options available online for catering and to go. They got the Famous Feasts and Pitmaster favorite combos. You can order meat by the pound. They got burgers, wings, sandwiches, home-style desserts. Don't sleep on the wings, by the way. As you're thinking about all those other, you know, real barbecue-y thing, don't sleep on wings. And Dave's also now available for pickup and delivery in Northgate, where they opened a ghost kitchen just a couple weeks ago. The ghost kitchen. All right, adult beverages also available to go. Perfect to pair with the barbecue so you can be ready for football season. Go to togo.famousdaves.com. Open 11 to 8. All right, as we get ready, Brock, for the first. I still am not quite ready to say the first NFL. Like, we haven't seen football. Like, I'm not. How do we just start with the NFL season? Like, I watched a clip the other day. It was just like this morning I saw somebody showing some film. And it, like, I hadn't even prepared myself for what football looks like again. It feels like it's been so long since I've watched, like, a full real game and all of that.
And
so,
usually, you know, we're out there in late July. Right. We've got some weeks. We're hanging. We're kicking it with Pete. Pete's throwing the football at our little tent. We're watching these guys. Salk, you've so enjoyed Kurt Menefee and myself on our preseason calls over the years.
Always.
And those have been must-watch television events for you and so many, as the ratings have clearly shown through the years. You've got none of that.
No.
So you just go from 0 to 100.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be weird for me, but I would think even harder to be in the booth. Adam Amin, Fox Sports play-by-play, will be on the call Sunday for Fox. Good morning, Adam. Thanks for taking some time with us.
Absolutely, gentlemen. Always a pleasure.
What's that going to be like for you? First time kind of watching football again?
It's going to be jarring, I think. You know, just like you guys were talking about, there's so much that we're just not used to in this kind of capacity. Like you guys were talking about, I'd be out at Bears training camp at some point, you know, getting ready for the preseason. I would have gotten into, you know, the depth charts and the 75th through 90th guys on a roster, not only for the Bears, but forever they're playing in the preseason. And that gives you a little bit of sense if you're calling games later that year about the team that you're covering. And we have none of that. We have no data, no analysis, no tape, nothing to base any of this off of right now. So that's obviously kind of difficult to process, that we're going to jump in and the first football games are calling are meaningful. And then the setting that these are going to be played in, with no fans, or, you know, depending on where you are, limited fans, and to have like these gladiatorial arenas with nobody in the crowd is going to be jarring. It'll be weird. It'll be tough to adjust initially. I think fans are happy that it will be back. I know I am. I know you guys are. But it's just going to be, there's going to be a little bit of ramp up time in terms of getting used to what we're seeing.
And then throw on top of that, Adam, for you, you make the transition from ESPN, where you were for an awfully long time, a year ago with McAfee and Hasselbeck in the booth on Thursday nights, and so much familiarity. You make the jump over to Fox, and then not only to Fox, but from college football to the NFL side. And I know you've done a lot of NFL work and worked there with the Bears and everything else, but you're jumping in with Stink on Sunday morning for the folks in Seattle to tune in and watch. So there's an awful lot of new going on for you as well.
Yeah, it's an exciting new. I'm appreciative for this new. I wish, obviously, it came under much more normal circumstances, but I think it's something I've always wanted to have an opportunity to do. Strange as this is going to be, it's something that I've always wanted an opportunity to do. You know, like you said, I've done radio for the NFL for 8 seasons. So, you know, I know this league fairly well. I was in Seattle for last year's opener against Cincinnati, a much closer game than maybe a lot of people expected, but I'm thankful. I'm grateful that we get an opportunity to even look at football and watch football and call football games, and I'm glad we're all going to get a chance to watch some this week and into the weekend.
Well, I'm glad you're with us, because I think we need you to help dispel some rumors. Obviously, you and Brock both new to the NFL this year. Brock's been with Fox now for a few years. And from what I'm told, there was an original thought to maybe put you guys together, and that Chris Myers would be with Mark Schlereth, but that one of you, and I couldn't suss out the full rumor, one of you said no to that, put the kibosh on that. Would either of you care to speak to the fact that you refused to work together?
Yes, I think Brock knows very, very deeply the hatred I have for working with him. It's not like we had a great time together at Auburn and enjoyed each other's company and working with one another and have a lot of respect for each other. It's none of that.
No.
I just can't stand working with the guy, obviously. That was me.
We'll get together after, Adam. We can talk all about that. I know exactly where
you're going. We'll hash it all out.
So how are you prepping for this? How many Bob Condotta stories and 710 Sport ESPN stories have you read? Getting yourself ready.
Let's just interrupt that. Was great.
Let's get some Bob Condotta mentions in here. Let's make sure we get Seattle Times references.
And by all means, screw up the name of our own website 7 different ways.
So let me. The good thing about a podcast, we can delete that. So Adam,
staying right in there.
How are you getting yourself ready for this? How many 710sports.com stories have you read? How many Stacey Ross stories? How many stories have you read on these Seahawks?
Jumping in on Clayton talking about Jadeveon going to the Titans, Brent talking about Nick Ford going to the practice squad, Brock is talking about stopping the run for Atlanta. All right,
wow.
The zone heavy scheme, will it be more nickel this year? You know, Atlanta's probably going to run a lot of 11. You know, these are the breakdowns that I come to 710 ESPN for. Did I say it right? I hope I said
it.
Yeah,
we'll take it. No, it'll work. It'll work. What'll be the broadcast focus for this? I mean, when you guys start thinking about, you know, where you'll focus your attention during a game where you haven't even had preseason to try to work out what these teams look like, what are some early thoughts of where the broadcast will focus?
Yeah, obviously when you have somebody coming off the season like Russell Wilson had, obviously that's going to be one of the treetop headlines. The addition for Atlanta, as we were kind of, you know, joking about, but it is true. The addition for Atlanta of Todd Gurley, how do they implement him? You know, a guy who averaged about 17 touches a game last year for the Rams. Where is his touch count going to be? You know, there have been stories that were similar to last year in the ramp up to the season where he's getting limited reps in practice. They want to keep him fresh. You know, if it's the left knee again, if it's the knee issues continuously. You know, there have been plenty of reports about that, so we'll touch on what Todd Gurley looks like. I think the offensive line for Seattle is going to be something to keep track of. And I think defensively in general, what does Ken Norton's defense look like? We didn't get a chance to see anything in the preseason, or not that he would give much away anyway, but you want to work out of some, you know, when you think you're going to see more sub packages, you think you might see a little bit more nickel. What's Marquise Blair's role going to be? Can Puna Ford take over as a leading disruptor? Can Bruce Irvin give you anything? There's all these different kind of defensive branches to this big tree that we're all keeping track of. I'm fascinated to know what the Seattle defense is going to look like and if it's going to look different than what we saw a year ago. So there's a handful of things that kind of stick out to us. Julio Jones probably on that list as well. What does he look like going deep down the field, and what does he look like in the red zone? What does the Atlanta offense look like when they get inside the 15-yard line? Is it going to be, you know, there's no more Austin Hooper. Are they going to try to target Julio? Is Julio going to continuously be double-teamed? How important, you know, is Calvin Ridley going to be in the red zone? These are all things that we would have had some idea about. You know, certainly not a clear picture, but a much clearer picture than we have right now if we did have a preseason and some games to get some information and data. But I think if we're looking at four or five things going into Sunday, I think that's kind of a preemptive list of what we're looking at and thinking about.
And Adam, the nice thing, as you said, in reference, is 8 years on the road doing the NFL on radio with ESPN. So you've got a pretty good global picture of the entire league. We are, as you can imagine, so hyper-focused on these Seahawks and have been for a decade, really, since Pete is here. And I think there's a hyper-focus, and I'll raise my hand, as one who is legitimately concerned about this defensive line room. There is no, obviously, Clowney. Is that finally ended? That saga ended as he signs with the Titans. But we look at it, and Pro Football Focus looked at it, and Pro Football Focus, I think, this offseason ranked their group last year 32 out of 32 in the league. On paper, you know, there are still some striking concerns. You know, based on your eyes, having seen just about everybody in this league over 8 years, is that concern merited up front?
I think it is. I think that is a fair assessment. When you, you know, are you going to get what you drafted for out of LJ Collier? Are you going to get, you know, more snaps from him? Are you going to get more consistency from him? That is a concern. I don't worry about the linebackers. I know some of the grades in that, you know, and I think I know what you're talking about, Brock, with Pro Football Focus. Some of the grades for Wright and Wagner may not have been as good last year as they have been in years past, but I also think that had a lot more to do with the scheme and how they were kind of forced to do a little bit more out of a base look when having to guard slot guys and the extra tight end or whatever offensive formation a team was putting out against Seattle's defense last year. I'm not worried about the defensive secondary. I think there will be enough consistency from last year to this year. You know, year two of the, you know, Legion, you know, post Legion of Boom era. I'm not worried about the back. I am worried about the front. Can you generate a pass rush? You know, there are guys that can win, that can disrupt, but can they get to the quarterback? You still need to be able to not only disrupt an offense, but to set it back. And that's something that I think Seattle is going to be, that if you're a fan of the Seahawks, you're going to be tracking that. What is third down look like? What does second down look like as well? Are you getting to the quarterback on second down passing situations? If it's second and seven, are you getting to the quarterback? Are you disrupting and are you driving them back to make it a third and 10, third and 12, rather than having to set up a third down and five defense where, you know, we've seen the trend. There's a lot more slot guys being used over the middle in short yardage outs. You know, any team that gets to third and four, third and five, their playbook is wide open. And most quarterbacks feel comfortable running the football as well. You know, maybe not so, you know, you might see that a little bit in Arizona this year, or you will see a lot of that in Arizona with third down and four, third down and five, and Kyler Murray getting opportunities to run the football. And all of that comes back to the defensive line. Not only can you, you know, do you have the ability to disrupt, but do you have the ability to drive back and put teams in a much more difficult third down situation? So I'll be curious to see that.
Yeah. I mean, can you come up with a team that has been a serious contender for a Super Bowl that didn't have a good defensive line?
I'm trying to think back to Super Bowl champions.
I mean, generally that's a position.
Maybe, you know, maybe the Patriots didn't have the highest sack totals from their linemen. Not their latest Super Bowl win, but a few Super Bowl victories back. It wasn't always the most dominant defensive line, but they also had linebackers that were really versatile. And I feel like, you know, other than that, I can't think of one right off the top of my head that really sticks out. Kansas City had a really good front last year. You know, Denver, you know, going back to their win against Carolina, one of the more dominant defenses right across the board we've seen. And obviously Denver's had very good pass rushers littered throughout their roster the last few years. When Seattle won, I pictured a really dominant defense in general. So we saw production from every level. The Giants, the Ravens, I mean, going back 15, 20 years now.
Just unheard of. Who wins without a great defensive line?
It's hard to think about, right? Like, you can't really pick up. Everybody's got a defensive guy that they felt like could get 10 sacks a year or 12 sacks, and now those numbers seem to be going up.
And I think especially those four-man fronts. I think when you alluded to a New England who plays a three-down and is so versatile, moves so many different pieces, maybe those three-down linemen, are trying to eat up the five blockers as best possible. So maybe it's a little more challenging. But I think to you guys' point, with a four-down front, my goodness, you've got to have difference makers. Hey, my last question for you is this, Adam. How many times in the broadcast on Sunday will these three words come out? Let Russ cook.
I get the feeling that Stink might bust that out a few times. I love hearing and seeing Pete's quotes and giving Russ that freedom. Let Russ cook, pound the rock. We're going to run the ball. I like the mindset of this, but listen, at the end of the day, this guy is just something different right now. I think to see somebody that sees the field the way that Russell has, I'm thinking about the throws that he made last year on a Thursday night to Tyler Lockett, the pinpoint accuracy on deep balls. We've always talked about great and explosive teams, Flacco to Torrey Smith, Roethlisberger to, a myriad of receivers, but Antonio Brown in particular. Just the deep ball connection that is so key now in this game. Tyreek Hill, Patrick Mahomes, the guys who are legitimate downfield threats. By the way, the Seahawks are going to see one of them in Julio Jones on Sunday. Ryan and Jones might be one of the best tandems in the NFC. And the South, the NFC South is riddled with them. But the way Russ has found that smoothness, the consistency on the deep ball, to be able to stretch the ball down the field, to stretch defenses vertically, it's more and more essential to the big play offenses that we see around the NFL. And I feel like this Seattle offense, if the offensive line can improve, and I know there were a lot of penalty issues on the right side last year. We'll see if the veterans, Obwehi and Shell, can fill that gap. I'll be fascinated to see Posick at center, where he played very well when he was at LSU. The rookie at right guard, Damian Lewis. If they can hold up for Russ to not necessarily even have to scramble out to find a deep ball alley, if he can do it from the pocket, this could be a scary, scary passing attack again. And I mean, we talked about great numbers last year with an offensive line that had some pressure issues. If they improve, let Russ cook. This could be a scary good offense again for Seattle.
Well, that'd be fun. Obviously, a scary offense would be great. I don't believe Pete's going to let anybody cook, but Carlos Hyde, Chris Carson, and kind of the rest of that running game. But we will we'll see. Adam, this is fun. Thank you. Thank you for doing this. I would say the big winner in this interview is Brent Stecker, for sure. Brent getting the name drop from Adam Amin is definitely the big winner today.
More Brent Stecker drops per capita in this interview than at any other point in the week.
Very impressive. Seriously, Adam, thank you very much. Good luck in the new gig. We'll look forward to watching and listening to you. Thank you.
Appreciate you, boys. Thank you so much.
All right, our thanks there to Adam Amin, his first time on the Brock. It is a weird kind of relationship you have. I'm surprised that Fox didn't put you guys together.
Yeah. After our success, and I know you watched, he and I do that Auburn spring game. He was referencing that.
Big
I know you watched
Auburn spring game fan.
Actually, I know
Famous
Kyle
Gus
did.
Malzahn conversation.
Kyle, who was on the sidelines working that Auburn spring game a few years ago? Adam
it was
Amin.
Shannon
Amin.
Spake.
No.
Who could forget? Molly McGrath.
Oh, no, come on.
She
was on the sidelines of Central Arkansas the other night, 2 weeks ago.
Was it Maria Taylor?
Jen Latta.
It was Lauren Sisler.
That's right.
Hey, I know Lauren Sisler.
Yes.
We met her. She was here in 2014.
A beautiful day on the Alabama Plains. Lauren Sisler was good. Roaming the sidelines.
I like her. She's talented.
You.
right, so we got a couple minutes. We'll do some Mariner stuff at the end. Let me run through a couple of quick predictions for the upcoming football season and maybe even for this week. Brock, who will lead the Seahawks in sacks by the end of the year?
He's not on the roster yet.
What?
Oh gosh!
Wow,
that's bad.
That's a bold.
By the way, that was I was going to go with I refuse to answer on the grounds that it may incriminate me.
That's a bold.
This is going to be like a Dwight Freeney situation.
Could be.
Somebody gets cut. They pick him up. He leads them in sacks.
This is going to be, and I like the fact that the Seahawks have $15 million in cap space right now, and lots of flexibility. They've got 8 guys on their active 53-man roster. They can pull some up off a practice squad. You can pull somebody off someone else's practice squad. I think you can protect 4 players on your practice squad per week, but there's an opportunity there, plus a trade deadline, and this is just a goofy year, man, an absolutely week-by-week goofy year. So I'm going to say, yes, that who ends up leading this team in sacks is currently not on their roster. It may be Clay Matthews, who they sign in 2 weeks if they can't win and anybody can't win off the ball over, you know, these first couple weekends out. So
I'm going to say the field
out there that you still have flexibility.
Everybody
to
you
go
just
get.
Mentioned is better than who's on the roster. So, like, yeah, laugh all you want about Cameron Wake. Now, the answer here is probably Ben Samayoa, but Brock, I think your answer is as good as any, and that's another potential positive for what they've done is just some of the financial flexibility here moving forward. All right, over under 30 sacks as a team. How many did they have last year?
28.5.
I'll take the over.
Over Jamal 30? Adams. It's going to help him get there.
It's got to be over, and I don't believe Pete Carroll for a second when he says they're not going to blitz more. I think going in, that is, he's not lying at all. Going in, they believe that they're going to play what they play, they're going to do what they do, but they're going to evaluate their people, they're going to evaluate what they do best because they've not had snaps in anger yet. True anger is a group, is this collective group. I think they'll be more aggressive. I think they have to be more than 28.5. They will be over that number.
Isn't that what Dunbar's good at? I was just seeing one of those Pro Football Focus things. Like, he's in the top 4 of the league for like one-on-one coverage. In theory, shouldn't that allow you to be able to blitz a little bit more? Isn't that why you would go get a guy like him?
Yes.
All right.
And you would hope Shaquille in a contract year. You'd hope Jamal being able to come down and cover a safety or a tight end. You'd hope Quandre coming down and having to cover a nickel slot receiver and be capable. And Marquise Blair should be a factor. You know what? As far as sacks goes, maybe I should have put Marquise Blair.
Yeah.
Maybe he's going to have five and a half
sacks. Still going to take the under. I'll take the under on 30.
Does Dunbar start on Sunday?
Doesn't look like it.
I don't know.
Like Flowers.
We'll see. We'll see about all that.
Maybe like a B.J. Finney. Come on, week 4.
At
start
corner?
Late. Yeah, B.J. Finney. I have to put him on an island.
I feel like he might get beat out there. I feel like it might be a mistake.
Dude, he's got to win off the snap. He wins off the snap and he, you know, choke holds and slams. He's good. But he didn't win off the snap. He's in some trouble.
At some point this year, will we hear Russell Wilson publicly ask to throw the ball off more often early in games?
Yes.
Yes.
No.
By week
Absolutely,
3.
We will.
By week 3, he'll be asked
yes.
for a public.
Yes, we will.
We already
now, hold
heard
on.
It.
Now, hold on. When Jake asks, does that count?
If Jake asks, who do we think prompted the question?
That's mean. I'm just kidding about that. I say no, we will not. Russell's better than that.
The entire season?
He's not going to need to.
You're crazy.
Not going to need
crazy.
To. They'll have success running the ball. He'll
you
be throwing the ball deep.
You got a dart in your neck, and you're crazy.
No, I'm not. I am right, and you were wrong, as usual. Yeah. As you know, Brock, I'm a big prediction guy. So when I make my predictions, you
so,
know they're
well,
right.
But important difference, he won't because he's a polite, respectful young man. He'll just follow his coach's lead, or he won't because he won't need to.
Both. Mm. He won't need to, and even if he does, he won't do that in season. If he does, it'll be after the season.
They're going to give up 38 points a game, and going to need to score 50, and they won't let him do it.
I don't believe he will say that until after the season. At least not publicly.
I think he will during the season.
Not publicly. Could he do it privately? Maybe.
Remember how good I was with my George Fant prediction, by the way, last year.
That's right.
We crushed you for that.
I did. Okay, next.
Who leads this team in interceptions?
Quentin Dunbar.
Quandre Diggs.
Ooh, I kind of like Diggs better. You're
right. It's between Shiggs and Diggs and Shaq Griffin. You're going Diggs.
No, I would have said Shaq Griffin.
It's Diggs. It's definitely Diggs. I don't see anybody coming close to him. That seems like an easy one for me. Who is a louder voice and presence, Jamal Adams or Bobby Wagner?
Bobby was voted captain.
Yes.
Once again, he is the established voice. Jamal will be louder. I think you're going to hear more from Jamal. I think he's been on absolute best behavior, and a new guy coming in is going to feel out the process. But that dude is a competitor. He wants to win. He wants to get his in the process of winning. And I think you're going to hear. I think Jamal will be the single loudest Seahawk over the course of the season.
I was thinking about how important it is that they brought in Jamal Adams. And I agree with everything you just said, Brock. I would have answered exactly the same way. I don't want this to sound insulting. I don't mean it that way, but I think it's important that you get some fresh new leadership around Pete every few years.
Yep.
That as much as I have changed my stance on whether or not Pete Carroll can lead men, he obviously can. He might be the best in the league at it right now. We're certainly right in that mix. That over time, some of the Pete messaging can get stale. And maybe that's what happened with Sherm. Maybe that's what happened with Earl. That just over time, Bennett, et cetera, that style that they see, I don't know, that over time you see things in it that maybe start to upset you that they don't at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think having a guy like Jamal Adams come in fresh and experience Pete and be really excited about it instead of sort of shrugging his shoulders or rolling his eyes at it, yep, is incredibly important. I know everyone didn't like when we talked about all the garbage Richard Sherman said in this last year here, but he did say it all. Remember, we're going to do, what did he call it, the kumbaya room and all that? Like,
went to the kumbaya room and kumbaya.
Right, like over time, a lot of Pete stuff for some of these guys, it wears off.
Well, his thing was, you keep saying all these things, but we're never addressing the real problems that are going on. And as you go around and you stare at this problem over and over and over again, and you don't feel like anybody's having an answer for it, yeah, you start to get that.
So sometimes you need to just move on and bring in new guys. And I think it's going to be very important to bring in the kind of leader that they did in Jamal Adams. I think that will be a great marriage for a few years. I really do.
Okay.
Who wins the most improved player award this year? Like, who comes out of nowhere and is the biggest pleasant surprise for this team? I'll go with Brandon Schell.
I was going to say Ethan Posick, actually.
Really?
I mean, LJ and Marquise Blair, and there's more important people defensively. I think Ethan is absolutely at the spot he should have been day one. And unfortunately, after all the iterations on the O-line with Justin being a tackle and then a guard and ultimately growing into Justin Britt, a very capable center, there was just not that room for those first few years for Ethan. When he played center in the preseason, you could see it. He's more natural. He's more comfortable. He's a guy that I think would rather have somebody not right on his nose, but gets to chip and gets to hit and gets to get the second level. And he's nasty and he plays through the whistle and he's going to instigate. And he's many of the things that, you know, you want in a center, which is what he was at LSU as an all conference performer year after year. So, yeah, I think Ethan Posick's going to be a very pleasant surprise at center.
Do they win Sunday in Atlanta?
If they do, it is going to be in the fourth quarter in the final 5 minutes.
Well, that's a bold prediction.
Yeah.
I think they do. I think they find a way. I don't know. I feel good about it.
Kind of tied.
Yeah, it's a close game.
Yeah. They are favored by 1.5. Yeah. I was kind of curious to see how that would go. They are favored by 1.5.
I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
28-27?
Yeah, that's somewhere in that range, sounds about right. Yeah. Sort of in that, you know, 20, somewhere in the 25 to 30 range in terms of points scored per team.
And anybody listening right now, the tens of thousands who tune into this podcast, your blood pressure is going to be up for 3 hours from 10 o'clock to 1 o'clock in a way it's not been for like 9 months.
It's going to be your blood pressure.
Now, are you going to be
you? Seriously, they'd do this.
Do you have a game at the same time?
Sure,
when is your game? Oh, so you can't even watch live.
That's going to be great DVR.
For you.
Yes, it will. You won't be seeing any of my little grasshopper texts.
Oh, that's going to be great. I'm so happy about you doing NFL
yes.
games. What do you have this week?
Oh, thanks. I've told you four
Green
times.
Bay, Minnesota.
Yep. I know. I
no,
was
seriously,
giving you
nice.
An opportunity to promote it.
Yep, right.
I know you have Green Bay, Minnesota. You're like the official like Packers guy. You got to go to Buffalo. I'm on it. I know what you got.
Oh, good.
Dude,
good.
Don't try to play me.
Got a good one. Got Minnesota, Green Bay in Minnesota on Sunday, same time.
So 2020, obviously, Brock has been a strange year for everybody, but this Mariner season is just, it's been as bizarre as seasons get. How strange has this Mariner season been as we sit here and at press time, they're what, two games out? It's really three because Houston would win a tie with them because they'll have a better record against them head to head.
Have they beaten Houston this year yet?
Yes, one time. Okay. And we'll see. I mean, they got a few more games.
Just like last year.
But they're better now than they were when they played Houston the last time, and Houston's worse. Lance McCullers is hurt. I don't know. So we'll kind of wait and see what happens.
The Mariners traded away good players at the deadline.
Got better. Yes. I mean, they've also only played Texas since then, and the Rangers are one of the worst teams. Who would have thought the Rangers couldn't hit?
No kidding.
So there's a lot of caveats on all this. But, God, what a strange season. They're having a weird year despite not playing a lot of weird games. Does that make sense? The season taken as a whole has been strange. Obviously, no crowd and all the sort of coronavirus stuff, and they're wearing masks. But and I don't mean, their games haven't been strange at all. They have one extra inning games all year.
Doubleheader game at San Diego was a weird game.
Very few back and forth, right? That just, they have not played strange games. They've just had a very weird season.
Can I argue that it feels almost traditional in some ways? Especially over this stretch where they're, 11-4? And traditional in the sense that, your 3-4 hitters
12-4,
are
by the way.
Are good. What's that?
12-4.
Oh, excuse me.
12-4 in their last 16 games. At press time, they've won six in a row.
Yeah, that when your 3-4 hitters are good, you've got an opportunity to score some runs. And Kyle Lewis and Kyle Seager have been fantastic this year. That when your starting pitching is good and Marco's ERA is now nearly sub-3, seven awesome innings the other day, and Justice Sheffield's come along, and Kikuchi's had some good starts, and Justin Dunn's had a couple good. When your starting pitching's, is solid and gives you 6+ innings, and your 3-4 hitters are productive guys and some of the better in the league, that, and then you get some pop from some other playmakers around them at times. Yeah, you're kind of a 500 team.
Yeah.
Which I don't think anybody possibly guessed this team could be, especially when they sold at the deadline.
So they're a few games out of the playoffs, right? Should they try to get into the postseason? Easy answer. Of course they should. They should be trying to get into the postseason, but not by doing anything that deviates from your long-term plan. So they should be trying to win every game. I don't want to hear anybody talking about tanking. They should be trying to get into the playoffs. It's certainly a possibility here with a few weeks left.
Two games
in the
out
season.
To catch two teams?
Absolutely. I mean, go get after it. You should absolutely be trying to do that. But I don't want to see them calling up anybody prematurely, if it wasn't part of their plan. I'm glad that they didn't buy at the deadline or something along those lines. I mean, you still need to stick to your long-term plan, but you're trying to win every game.
I mean, do you want to sign
a heck of a job of it?
Do you want to sign a veteran free agent pitcher like Felix? Like bring Felix back for the stretch?
No, Felix opted out. He's opted out.
I know, he could opt back in.
I don't think you can at this point.
I don't think it's allowed.
I think he's opted out.
I opted out as a Braves, but hey, for the Mariners, I'd opt in.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think it works that way. So,
But you don't bring up Kelenic. You don't bring up anybody on your taxi squad.
Not unless you were planning to. Now, they may have been planning to bring up Logan Gilbert at some point here, and he still may come up and get a start or two, in which case, fine. I don't have a problem with that if that's part of his development plan. I just don't want to see them, doing things that they weren't ordinarily going to do. Does that make sense?
Yep. Yeah, and I think we talked about that last week a little bit, right? That's been the best part of this entire season is, and it manifested the most at the trade deadline with Austin Nola and Taijuan Walker and some of these other pieces, that you don't deviate from the long-term plan. And you know what? If your young pitchers emerge and Justice Sheffield and Justin Dunn emerge and Marco continues to build and show that he's an absolute pro in this league, not an ace, but a pro in this league, as topsy-turvy as 2020 is all over the place, to have some stability there. And starting pitching, we know that. That is the, back to how we started the show with the D-line and the challenge over the last 20 years is a D-line in the NFL is the one group that can make everybody else better around them. And even inexperienced or less talented people behind them, that D-line makes people better. And we know this in pitching, that if you have starting pitching that can give you 6-7 innings, man, you have a chance to win some games, which is exactly what they have done, certainly over lesser opponents the last week and a half.
Has this team shown you enough with 20 games left to really feel like, they've got enough pieces where they don't need just 1,000 more prospects to make this thing work? Do you believe enough in their core, in their starting rotation, and in their starting lineup to say, within the next year or two, they could be good?
They yes. still need a few pieces.
Yes, but that has to include your young arms that we've not seen, right? As far as your pieces, does that mean you've got to go sign, you know, another starting pitcher or two? You certainly have to add significant experience, dominant people on the back end in your bullpen.
But I mean, you got Marco Gonzalez, Justin Sheffield, Justin Dunn, all showing around a 4 ERA yeah. playing consistent baseball at starting pitching. That's not something you expected to have right now.
No,
you
absolutely might. Yeah, I think there have been a lot of surprising things to be happy about this year. Let me give you, I've got five things that have surprised me in a good way. Five positive surprises from the Mariners.
Top five.
Number one, clean, smart, mature baseball. We talked about this a little bit last week.
We did.
They have played clean, smart, mature baseball, both defensively and on the base paths. A couple reasons why. One, it does help to have a Gold Glove level first baseman. That has been helpful. I mean, that cleans up some potential defensive miscues and makes you look cleaner. But they've been aggressive on the base paths, and it hasn't cost them. That's not to say they haven't gotten thrown out on the base paths. They have. Don't look at this and go, oh, they've made this. Of course, every team does, especially when you're as aggressive as the Mariners are with young players. But they've done pretty well with it. I'd say that's a huge – their base running has been a major net positive. Their defense has certainly not been a net negative.
They're averaging nearly a bag a game.
They're playing really well both on the base paths and defensively. So that's one. Number two, Dylan Moore. Dylan Moore is a gigantic surprise. Do you yes. remember the start he had last year? The three errors in an inning. He looked like a nothing.
He had to play the Brad Miller roller coaster.
He is turning himself into a legitimate everyday player. As of today, he has nearly a 900 OPS. He's 27 years old, so maybe he's a late bloomer. If he is, and this is legitimate, think about the flexibility he gives you moving forward. He could yep. be your starting second baseman. He could be your starting third baseman. He could be sort of a Ben Zobrist type where you move him around yes. and he's in the lineup every single day. And by the way, when you've got guys like Ty France, et cetera, that flexibility is incredibly important. So huge surprise in a pleasant way, number two, Dylan Moore. Number three for me is Justin Sheffield. Mm-hmm. I know he's had a few clunkers. I know he hasn't been perfect in every start. But overall, he's been very good. And if you watch a lot of those games en route, Aaron often will ask the player in the stands, like, hey, if you could have one other pitch from somebody else's repertoire and add it to yours, who would it be? And I've only heard him ask that question twice. Both times the answer was immediately Sheffield slider, like before he could even get the question out. It was with Margavichus, the other day. And he's like, oh, Sheffield, so it's not even close. That's a wipeout slider. So, look, he's still young. He's Evan White's age.
Mm.
If that's the Justice Sheffield, if what we've seen sort of that high end, if he can be more consistent with it, huge pleasant surprise.
Top two?
He could be. I mean, the way he's at his he's got to be more consistent.
Yeah.
But certainly a spot in your rotation.
Well, excuse me. I said top two. We're down to your top two. We got our top five surprises.
Number
top
four. Jerry DePoto's eye for scrap heap guys. We never really seen that from him before. But if you kind of look at this year, Dylan Moore, scrap heap, Tim Lopes, Haggerty, Marmolejos, even
Nola.
Austin Nola. Yeah, I mean, that's a huge one. Philip Irvin, who's now, I actually kind of enjoyed watching him his first few games. I know there's people listening who don't even know who that is, but okay. All of those guys have helped you. If you can do that consistently, even on a good team, you've got to have a few of those randos who end up helping you win, right?
A lot of relationship. Jerry's a trader. Jerry likes to move people and personnel, and you would think over a couple decades in the game, that should be a strength of his.
Yeah. So that's four, and then the last one would just be, obviously, Kyle Lewis. Just everything about him. The powers continue to develop. The defense has been fantastic. The adjustments he's made have been amazing. The leadership, the energy. I mean, just throw it all in. Everything about Kyle Lewis has been a pleasant surprise this year.
You think he ends up with an OPS over 900? 20 games to go or so, 19 games.
He's got it right now.
He has it right now. It's been over 1,000, and obviously. You know,
I'd probably bet against it just given, you know, being a rookie and some of the pitching they'll see at the end of the year, but
yep.
It's not impossible. That's yep. for sure. And even if it does fall below 900, well, you're going to complain?
Nope.
I mean, what's it going to get to, 850? I mean, that's a wonderful rookie year, and whether he wins yep. the rookie of the year or not, who cares?
Yeah, he's not hitting great. Yesterday, he gets first two at-bats, gets walks and runs on it. Like, yep. That's a veteran approach to yes. be able to have, my bat's not working, but I'm still going to contribute at the plate and not just swing for my heels.
100% true.
I think the one word you've used a couple different times the last few weeks is the one that resonates, and frankly, out of your whole top five there, which I enjoy, but the one word that is the single most surprising this season, because while we've not seen it a ton, even with older players, is maturity. Mm-hmm. This just looks like and feels like a mature team, even though it is heavily inexperienced, even though guys are coming in and out, even though you don't even know the names of some of the new faces that come in there. And that's a credit to Scott, his staff, to Jerry, to all of them, is there's just a level of maturity beyond their years, and certainly with Kyle, who is poised to be the Rookie of the Year, and that spells very good things for years to come.
Yeah, it's certainly been fun to watch this team. We'll see whether or not. I would think it would be a blast if they found a way into the playoffs. I don't know whether it's possible or not, but I mean, look, the teams ahead of them aren't playing good. The Yankees haven't been playing well. The Astros haven't been playing well. We'll see. They get to see the A's a bunch of times, so... Look, it's probably not going to happen. I'm not going to, you know, start playing music and getting pumped. Like, if it happens, cool. And if not, this year's been a success either way. So, what a fun little season for something.
What a fun little podcast we find ourselves in early September.
Hey, guess what? When we come back next week, Brock, we'll have an NFL game to talk about.
Yes, we will.
That. Think we'll be ready? Think we'll be pleased to actually talk about a little NFL game? I think we will.
Yes.
I'm looking forward to it. We will talk to you guys all next week. Stay safe in the smoke and everything else here in Washington. Until then, Brock, the hay
is in the barn.
See you, everybody. Get to the chopper!